Welcome back to Storytime Anytime with the Homer Public Library. We're currently reading The Dragons of Blue Land by Ruth Stiles Gannett. This is Chapter 9, Blue Land. Elmer and the dragon dozed on until late afternoon. They were both impatient to be off, but as Elmer said, we'd only spoil everything by getting there before it's dark enough. So they waited and rested and drank cool mountain air. The dragon munched ferns while Elmer ate his third chocolate bar. "I can't stand it any longer," said the dragon, jumping up and shaking out his wings. "All right," said Elmer, "let's go." He put on his knapsack and climbed onto the dragon's back. They walked to a clearing in the woods, and the dragon took off across awful desert. It was hot over the sands, even in the late afternoon, and Elmer crouched over to hide from the burning winds. The dragon panted for air, but flew faster and faster, hardly daring to think what might have happened since he'd left. He kept muttering, "If only the sandstorms would start up. Where are the sandstorms? That would make the men leave us alone." When they came to the dry, rocky slopes of Blue Land, the sun was low on the horizon, and they knew it would soon be dark inside the circle of mountains. "Keep a sharp lookout," warned the dragon as they picked their way through the boulders. "They may have men most anywhere." Up, up they went, slowly, quietly. At last they reached the gap between the peaks, and Elmer gasped at the sight below him. The beautiful meadows of Blue Land shone bright green, dotted with patches of snapdragons glowing white in the dimming light. And at the center, the lake water reflected the pink of the sunset and the pink of the sky. Suddenly it was gone into darkness. But the dragon had been straining to see across the lake, and suddenly he grabbed Elmer for joy. "The men, I saw the men, and they were still standing outside the cave with the net. Maybe we're not too late." He hurried Elmer down to the giant snapdragon bush, which hid the entrance to the little tunnel. "I don't think they found it," he whispered happily as he pulled aside the roots and rocks. "Neither do I," agreed Elmer, looking all around to be sure he'd remember the spot. Then he took off his knapsack and unpacked one whistle, one horn, the flashlight, and the ball of string. "Lower your neck so I can measure the strings for your whistle and horn," he said, getting out his jackknife. "Why do I have to have them on strings?" asked the dragon. "I don't want you to drop them. If the men never see them, maybe they'll never guess what happened." The dragon laughed and tried out the strings to make sure he could reach the horn and whistle easily. "They're fine," he said. "Now I'll wait here until you tell me it's time. Look, the men are building a campfire. They must be having supper." "So much the better," said Elmer as he started down into the tunnel with his knapsack. "But how will your family know I'm your friend?" "Tell them Boris sent you."
"Boris, is that your name?"
"Yes," said Boris uncomfortably. "I was embarrassed to tell you before."
"It's no worse than Elmer," said Elmer.
"I suppose not, and it's certainly not so bad as some in my family. I might as well tell you the rest. My sisters are Ingborg, Eustacia, Gertrude, Bertha, Mildred, and Hildegard. And my brothers are Emil, Horatio, Conrad, Jerome, Wilhelm, Dagobert, and Egmont. Can you imagine? But hurry, I can't wait to hear what's been happening to them all." Once inside the tunnel, Elmer snapped on his flashlight and shot it over the damp walls. The ceiling was high enough so he could walk easily. Down, down he went, around curves, through small rooms, and then more narrow tunnels until at last he came to the place where the dragon had got stuck. He heard scratching and scraping noises, and he knew he must be very close to the dragon family. "It's Elmer, Elevator, Boris's friend," he whispered as bravely as he could.
"Who?"
"Elmer, Elevator, Boris's friend. Boris is out at the entrance to the tunnel, and I've come to rescue you." "Turn off your light and come in," whispered another voice, and Elmer walked slowly into the darkness. He stopped and felt himself surrounded by huge forms, breathing excitedly.
We can't tell you how grateful we are, said the gigantic dragon mother. Never mind that, whispered the father. What's your plan, and how can we help? We're almost starved to death. Oh, have some chocolate bars, said Elmer, generously giving away his last three. Here, I'll open them up for you and divide each one into 5 pieces. I'm afraid it's not much, but it ought to help a little. He held his flashlight inside the knapsack and divided up the chocolate as he explained his plan. They all chuckled low dragon chuckles and began to feel much better. Then Elmer made string necklaces for horns and whistles for all the dragons and carefully tied them on. He wanted to take a really good look at the tremendous family, but they were near the entrance to the cave, and he had to keep the flashlight in the knapsack. As he took out his cap pistol, he asked, "Do you know how heavy the net is and how it's fastened across the entrance?" "No," answered the dragon father. "Well, I'd better look," said Elmer. He quietly crept up toward the net, but the men were sitting close by, and he didn't dare get near enough to see it well. "We'll have to trust to luck," he told the dragons as he started back through the tunnel to Boris.